It's Tuned to Yesterday, broadcasting programs from the golden age of radio. Welcome, I'm your host, Mark Livonier. Crime stories in this hour, later on the lineup from 1952, but first a very popular program at the time it aired, the Mole Mystery Theater, heard on NBC. This episode from May 21st, 1948, called Solo Performance.
Get set for the Mole Mystery Theater, and details later on about Mole's big $25,000 contest, My Closest Shave. First prize, a $3,500 vacation trip. Other prizes, 5 new Ford Deluxe sedans, 10 late model television sets, and many other big cash prizes.
Good evening. This is Jeffrey Barnes, welcoming you to the Mole Mystery Theater, a program that presents the best in mystery and detective fiction. Tonight's story by George and Gertrude Fass is entitled Solo Performance. Our stars, the very versatile Everett Sloan, stage, screen, and radio actor currently appearing with Rita Hayworth and Orson Welles in the motion picture Lady from Shanghai. Tonight, Mr. Sloan will play the part of Albert Perry, an actor who is forced by circumstances to play the most difficult role of his career, a role wherein his life depends upon his solo performance.
Miss Johnson.
Yes, Mr. Hamill. I was just leaving for the day. Shall I bring the mail in?
No, leave it on your desk. Before you go, will you do something for me?
Yes, Mr. Hamill.
Phone the theater and ask Blaine to come over here and see me after rehearsal. I will wait for him.
Yes, Mr. Hamill. Anything else?
No. Good night, Miss Johnson.
Good night, sir.
It was over. The most difficult performance of my career. I had played the part of Lee Hamill, theatrical producer, with Lee's body lying not 15 feet away. I suppose I'd had better roles, more artistic ones, that is, but never a tougher one. This one had lasted 5.5 hours, and my life hanging on every minute of it. Looking back, I can see now how inevitable that performance was from that night 2 weeks before when I waited for Elspeth at Luigi's.
Hey, Mr. Perry, you order dinner now?
No, not yet, Luigi. I'm still waiting for my wife. She's late for some reason.
Yes, I can see. You wait for 2 hours. And look what you do to the tablecloth, Mr. Perry. Writing all over it like that. That's not nice. The laundress, she complains. It's hard to get out.
I'm sorry, Luigi. Bring me a glass of Chianti, will you?
Yes, Mr. Perry. Glass of Chianti.
Oh, Albert, I'm sorry I'm late. My poor starved darling.
Well, finally.
I've kept you waiting. Have you ordered yet?
Just a glass of wine.
One glass? Luigi, bring a whole bottle. We're celebrating, darling.
Celebrating what? Your arrival?
I got the part. What do you think of that, my sweet? Isn't it wonderful?
Oh, sure, that's great news. But why did it take this long?
Oh, well, you know how Lee Hamill likes to talk. And then after he decided to give me the part, he had to go into a long discourse on how to interpret the role. I'd have called if I could, but I just couldn't interrupt him. And when I finally did break away, I didn't want to lose a minute.
The Chianti, Mr. Perry.
Chianti? It should be champagne.
Well, you know as well as I do, we can't even afford this.
Oh, but we can. I'll be getting $500 a week. Think of that. And, oh, darling, I didn't tell you. I think there's a part for you, the part of Tony. He's just your type. When I see Lee tomorrow, I'll talk to him about it.
No, save your breath. I saw him last week.
You did? He didn't tell me.
Well, there was nothing to tell.
But what did he say?
He said there was nothing for me in the play. Nothing.
Oh, but that was last week, darling. Now he may feel different, especially if I ask him.
If you ask him?
I'll turn on the fatal charm.
Why, you'll do nothing of the kind. Not with that wolf.
Silly, I'm kidding. But you just leave it to me, darling. We'll be a husband and wife team yet. I can see it now. Night Cafe, a Lee Hamill production starring Albert and Elspeth Perry.
Hello?
Albert.
Well, look at you. What's the occasion?
I'm going downtown to meet Lee.
Well, what for? Rehearsals aren't starting already, are they?
No, but he wants to discuss the play with me. And that gives me just the opportunity I want, you know, to ask him about you.
Look, baby, I'd just as soon you didn't. Any favor Hamill does for anyone has to be paid for. What time will you be home?
Oh, I don't know. But if I'm late, you just go right ahead and eat. Don't wait for me.
Well, okay.
Oh, the script. I left it here on the desk.
Oh, I was looking it over. Here it is.
Oh, thanks.
You know, I guess I could handle that Tony role, all right.
Oh, I know you can, Doc. Oh, Albert.
Now what is it?
Look what you've done to this script. Why do you have to scribble on things?
Well, if I didn't do that, I'd probably bite my nails. Just nervousness.
Goodbye, my pet. And don't worry, the part's as good as yours. And Hamill won't eat me, you know. Not unless I let him. Bye, darling.
Well, every day the following week, she went down to see Lee to discuss interpretation, she said. We'd meet at Luigi's every night at 6. She'd come in bubbling over with excitement and always with the assurance that she was on the point of landing the role for me. But Thursday morning, I found an item in Variety. I handed the paper to her to read.
Lee Hamill signs Matt Blaine for a featured role in Night Cafe opposite Elsbeth Perry.
So you're still working on Lee to give me the part, are you?
Oh, but darling, I knew about Matt Blaine. As a matter of fact, Lee signed him on Monday.
And today is Thursday. Why didn't you tell me Monday that Blaine had the part?
Because on Monday, I didn't want to make you feel bad. And after what happened Tuesday, I wasn't so sure you couldn't still have the part.
All right, what happened Tuesday?
Well, we were all in Lee's outer office waiting for Lee to call us in. Well, you know how Blaine is, always doing takeoffs on people to prove what a good mimic he is.
He thinks he's good.
Well, this time he decided he'd give an imitation of Lee interpreting roles for it. Now, my dears, pay close attention. The script calls...
Let me do it. Here's the way Lee sounds. Now, my dears, my darlings, this wonderful script demands stark realism. Life in the raw, a stripping down to essentials.
Oh, that's Lee to the life, Albert. Well, Blaine did it fairly well, too. He was going great guns when Lee opened the door of his private office and stood there taking it all in, sore as a boil.
Rough break for Blaine.
Lee didn't speak to him all that day. Blaine is so unnerved that I'm sure he'll mangle his part.
Oh, I see. So now I'm supposed to sit around and pray that Blaine gets the sack.
Oh, don't feel that way about it. He's just not right for the part anyway. So keep your chin up, sweet.
All right. What about dinner tonight?
Oh, I forgot to tell you. Lee asked me to have dinner with him.
Well, you're not going to, are you?
Oh, I never would, only he's asked the cast up to his apartment after dinner for the first reading. And since I'll be in the city anyway, I thought it might be just as well to accept his invitation.
All right. Well, I'll go along downtown with you. I'll eat at the Lambs and pick you up after your reading.
Oh, but Albert, I don't know how soon we'll finish.
All right, so I won't pick you up. At least you don't mind my coming downtown with you.
Oh, not at all. But hurry and dress. I don't want to be late.
I'd had dinner at the Lambs Club and was knocking some balls around in the billiard room when I saw Matt Blaine.
Hi, Albert.
Oh, hello, Matt. What are you doing here?
Oh, same thing you are, wasting time. Won a game?
Well, don't you have a reading tonight at Lee Hamill's?
Reading? Oh, no. We don't begin until Friday, first rehearsal. Well, rack 'em up. Let's go.
The next day, I didn't mention to Elspeth my meeting Blaine at the Lambs. But when she told me she was going to visit her mother that night, I simply said I'd go along.
But, Albert, why spoil your evening? You know you and Mother never get along.
All right, if that's the way you want it.
Why don't you go to a movie or something?
That's an idea.
You'll have a much better time there than at Mother's. And so will I.
I got my hat and left, but instead of going to the movies, I waited in the shadows near the subway entrance. When Elspeth came out, I followed her into the subway, unseen. She got off at 59th Street, and the sense of shame I had at following her was replaced by a feeling of rage and frustration. when she went into Lee Hamill's hotel on Central Park South. I waited outside the hotel until midnight. And when she didn't come out, I left. At that moment, I felt I could kill Lee Hamill.
Friends, here's your chance to get that luxurious vacation trip you and your family have been waiting for, all expenses paid. That's right. A $3,500 vacation trip or cash is the grand prize in Mole's fascinating contest, My Closest Shave. And there are 106 other prizes. 5 new Ford sedans, 10 of Emerson's latest table model television sets installed, or radio phonographs, and also 75 cash prizes totaling $5,000. Now, that's $25,000 worth of prizes in all.
Well, tell us more, Danny. How do you enter the contest?
Well, it's easy. It's fun. Get the printed rules and suggestions from your druggist. Then write the story of your closest shave, your narrowest escape from danger, embarrassment, or failure, your most exciting experience of any kind. The story, not the writing, is what counts. Send your entry with two end flaps bearing the name Mole from any Mole carton. Mail to Mole, Post Office Box 49... New York 8, New York.
Now that's Mole, Box 49, New York 8, New York.
The whole family can get in this grand contest. Send as many entries as you wish, but include two Mole end flaps from the carton with each entry. Remember, 107 prizes worth $25,000, including trade prizes, are waiting to be won. So get your close shave entry in soon.
This is Jeffrey Barnes again, returning you to the Mystery Theater and Act Two of Solo Performance, starring Everett Sloan as Albert Perry.
What would you like for breakfast, dear?
Just coffee. You came in pretty late last night.
Oh, you know how Mother is. She kept me at gin rummy till past midnight.
Elspeth. That movie last night started wheels turning in my brain. I got an idea.
An idea?
Why don't we go out to Hollywood and have a try at pictures?
You seem to forget I have a contract and a darn good one.
You seem to forget I have no darn good contract. I've made up my mind, Elspeth. We're going.
Albert, I can't break my contract with Lee.
Oh, the devil with Lee.
This part will make me, Albert. It's practically a starring role.
Lee means more to you than I do, doesn't he?
He what? Oh, now I begin to see. You're not crazy. You're only jealous.
I'm not jealous.
Oh, yes, you are. Well, believe it or not, I'm relieved. That's a normal reaction anyway. After all, I guess I have been spending quite a bit of time with Lee. But just let me assure you, dear.
You don't have to bother.
Oh, but wait. Wait, we begin rehearsals on Friday. Blaine will be fired then, I'm sure of it. Lee didn't exactly promise me, but you're almost certain to get the part. Won't you wait until Friday, dear?
All right. I'll wait until Friday. Friday afternoon, I went downtown and waited outside the theater. At 1, the cast began to leave by the stage door. Then Lee and Elspeth came out together and hopped into Lee's car. I knew where they were going. Elspeth said very little to me that weekend. Maybe she knew I wouldn't take any more of that line about trying to get me Blaine's part. Monday's rehearsal was called for 2:30. I figured Lee Hamill would be in his office all morning preparing for it. At 11:30, I entered his reception room.
Oh, good morning, Mr. Perry.
Good morning, Miss Johnson. Will you tell Mr. Hamill I'd like to see him?
Oh, of course. Sit down, won't you? Elvis Perry's husband is here. Yes, sir. Yes, Mr. Hamill. I'm sorry, Mr. Perry, but he's just too busy to speak to anyone. He's not casting, you know.
But this is important. It's something personal.
I'm really sorry, Mr. Perry, but you can't see Mr. Hamill today.
Oh? Okay, I'll drop in again tomorrow, Miss Johnson.
Do that, Mr. Perry.
But I didn't take the elevator down. Instead, I slipped into an alcove at one end of the corridor. It was close to 12, and I knew the girl would soon be going to lunch. At about 10 to 12, I heard the door open and the girl's footsteps going off toward the ladies' room. I walked quickly back to Hamill's office, crossed the reception room, and entered his private office.
Yes? Oh, it's you, Perry. Miss Johnson told you I was busy, did she not?
She did. But you're going to listen to me whether you can spare a moment of your precious time or not.
Before you begin, Mr. Perry, please understand, I have no work for you.
I know that.
Then we have nothing to say to each other. I ask you to leave my office.
I'm not leaving.
Mr. Perry, merely because I have engaged your wife to act in my play is no excuse for you to force yourself on me when I have no time for you.
You've got plenty of time for my wife, haven't you? Now listen to me, Hamill. No louse of a producer is going to live to brag that he walked off with my wife, see?
Oh, this is too much. Get out of my office.
Take your hands off me, Hamill. I warn you.
Get out! Get out or I will brain you!
The hysterical fool picked up a paperweight and came at me. I grappled with him, and then suddenly the hatred I felt for him swept over me in a blind rage. My groping right hand seized an object on his desk, and I plunged my fist into his chest. Ha! Oh, oh, oh. He was on the floor, dead. And in my hand, I held a silver letter opener, dripping blood. I dropped it and made for the door. I had to get out before the girl came back. But just as my hand gripped the knob, I heard the outer door open. I was trapped. And then the interoffice phone. If it wasn't answered, she'd come in here. Acting almost on reflex, I walked over and picked it up.
Hello? Mr. Hamill? Mr. Hamill?
Yes?
I'm ordering a sandwich for lunch, Mr. Hamill. Shall I order something for you?
No. No, thank you, Miss Johnson.
Very well, Mr. Hamill.
I'd carried it off. Now she'd have a lunch in the office and then go out to shop, probably. All I had to do was wait. My eye fell on the body. Quietly, I pulled it to the closet and pushed it in. Then I wiped the handle of the letter opener and threw that into the closet, too. The telephone, the doorknob, and the key. I had to get my fingerprints off them. My handkerchief did it quickly. I pulled on my gloves. I'd take no further chances of leaving a print behind. Half an hour to wait and to think things over in comfort. I sat down at Lee's desk and lit a cigarette. The clock had ticked away the minutes. 5, 10, 15, 20, when...
Yes?
Mr. Van Dyke is on the phone.
I cannot talk to him now.
But he says he must discuss a very important problem of direction.
Very well. Put him on.
Hello, Lee. What about that first entrance of the girl? What have you decided about it?
Oh, yes, yes, the entrance. I leave it all to you. You are the director. Do it however you think best.
But you said yesterday...
Yes, I was wrong. You are right.
What?
Yes, yes. Just as you said it should be.
Say so. Only after what you told me yesterday, I hardly...
A man can change his mind, no? I have thought it over. You are right and I am wrong. That is all.
Okay, Lee.
For the next 2 hours, nothing happened. And then I was startled by the ringing of the phone. I realized it was a call on Lee's private wire.
Hello, Lee. Elspeth.
Now I really began to sweat. Could I possibly fool my own wife? Especially since she had already heard my impersonation of Lee.
Hello? Hello? Lee?
Yes, Elspeth, darling.
Van just told us you wouldn't be here at rehearsal, and I just had to speak to her.
What is it, my dear?
You know.
What would you like me to say?
Just three little words.
What?
Dear, I just can't continue without knowing.
Oh, so you want an answer?
Yes, please.
Let me hear you say them first, those three little words you want.
He has it.
He has it?
Yes, the job, the part of Tony.
Oh, oh.
Please, Lee, it means so much to me. And Albert would be so much better than Blaine, you know that.
Is this why you have been so nice to me?
Oh, don't be angry, Lee. You know how I feel about Albert. But if he doesn't get the job, he's going to the coast.
So?
And if he does, I'm going with him.
And break your contract?
I have no alternative.
Well, In that case, I have no alternative, my dear. The job is his.
Oh, you darling. Thanks a million. I'll phone him right away.
Why not wait and tell him personally tonight? The pleasure would perhaps be greater.
Oh, perfectly right. I will wait. Oh, thanks again, darling.
Fellow Field, who has just discovered that the wife he suspected was never anything but loyal to him, that the man he has just murdered in a jealous rage was never anything more to her than a business acquaintance, I'll tell you how he feels. It may surprise you by its very simplicity. He wants to escape the consequences of his crime. Yes, that's all. He just wants to escape. At last, it was 5:30 and the secretary left. 10 minutes later, I walked down the stairs unseen, mingled with the crowds leaving the building, and took the subway. In 40 minutes, I was home. And now the clincher. Still impersonating Lee Hamill and pretending to be at the office, I phoned Van Dyke at the theater and told him I was dismissing Blaine from the cast. My alibi was complete. Since Elspeth had dutifully reported to me that I was to replace Blaine in the cast of Night Cafe, I attended the rehearsal the next day. I wasn't very surprised when the police walked in, but the rest of the cast were electrified.
Quiet, please. Quiet. Quiet, please. Mr. Hamill was murdered some...
Oh, my...
Just 1 minute, please. Was murdered sometime between 6:20 last night and midnight. He was alive at 6:20, according to his director, who spoke to him on the phone. Now, I want you all to understand that none of you is under suspicion. But I am asking you to come down to headquarters with me so we can round up some facts.
At headquarters, we found Blaine, looking like a ghost. He'd been questioned already, and he showed it. We were all separated and put into individual rooms. I sat down at an old battered desk and had myself a cigarette. There was a pad of yellow ruled paper and a pen and inkwell there. It made me smile. If I had wanted to write my confession, all I had to do was pick up the pen and start. All afternoon, the questioning went on while I waited alone in the room. I ran out of cigarettes at about 7, and they wouldn't let me send for any. Finally, at 10, Lohman opened my door and came in.
You're Perry, aren't you?
Yes?
No, don't get up. Just stay where you are. I'll use the corner of the desk. I understand you were up to see Hamill yesterday morning.
Yes, I'd heard there might be a chance for me to take Blaine's place in the play, so I went to speak to Mr. Hamill about it.
And he wouldn't see you?
Well, his secretary said he was busy.
He told you there was no casting, didn't he?
No, he didn't tell me anything. Miss Johnson told me, but not Mr. Hamill himself.
What made you think he'd give you Blaine's place?
My wife told me there was that possibility. And as a matter of fact, when she called him later that afternoon, he did tell her that I had the part.
It was sort of tough on Blaine, wasn't it?
Well, you know how those things are. Fortunes of war.
I suppose Blaine was plenty sore about it. Sore at Hamill, I mean.
Yes, I suppose. Does he have an alibi for last night?
Suppose you leave the questions to me, Perry. What about your own alibi?
That's easy. From about 6:30 to 8, I was at Luigi's, a little Italian restaurant uptown. You can check with Luigi. After that, my wife can alibi me, if you'll accept her word.
And before 6:30?
Well, does that matter? If Hamill was alive until 6:20...
Van Dyke swears he was. He talked to him on the phone, but somehow our medical examiner has other ideas. He thinks Hamill was killed earlier in the afternoon.
But how could that be?
Where were you yesterday afternoon?
Why, home.
Any witnesses?
No, do I need any?
Tell me, Perry, when you came to see Hamill yesterday morning, did you go into Hamill's private office at all?
No, the girl must have told you.
And you weren't in that private office at any time during the afternoon?
I was not. I was at home, I give you my word.
Mind if I take that pad on the desk?
Certainly not.
You do this?
What? Oh, yes. Bad habit of mine. I scrawl cats all over everything.
Bad habit is right, Barry. So bad, it's going to send you to the chair.
What do you mean?
We found cats just like these doodled on Hamill's blotter pad.
But my wife spoke to Hamill. Van Dyke spoke to him later in the afternoon. He was alive.
You're an actor, Perry. They tell me you're pretty good at imitations. Must have been hard at it all afternoon on the phone and between times scrawled cats all over the nice clean blotter. That's why we kept all you folks waiting in separate rooms. A new parlor game we thought of. We call it Find the Doodler.
It did an actor's heart good to hear them at the trial. Right down the line, Elspeth Van Dyke and Hamill's secretary, each one swore it was Hamill's voice and not mine that came through the telephone that afternoon. Yes, their testimony added up to a rave notice from George Jean Nathan. I'd have gone free, too, if it hadn't been for the cats. But then, there's always an if, isn't there?
This is Jeffrey Barnes again, inviting you to be with us next week when our star will be the glamorous stage and screen actress Virginia Gilmore, who is currently appearing in the motion picture Close-Up. Miss Gilmore will play the leading role in a story by Paul Monash entitled Deadly Nuisance.
The original music for the Mole Mystery Theater is composed and conducted by Alexander Semler. Everett Sloan was starred and Elizabeth Morgan featured in tonight's performance. Any resemblance between the names and characters used on this show and any actual persons, living or dead, is purely coincidental. And now this is Dan Seymour saying goodnight until next week at this same time when the Mystery Theater presents Deadly Nuisance, starring Virginia Gilmore. This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.
The Mole Mystery Theater, on Tuned to Yesterday from May 21st, 1948 on NBC, one of the last surviving shows from the series. About 15 million people tuned in to hear that episode when it first aired. And you're listening to An Hour of Crime on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Livonier. Next, it's The Lineup with the CBS broadcast from July 15th, 1952.
Ladies and gentlemen, we take you now behind the scenes of a police headquarters in a great American city, where under the cold, glaring lights will pass before us the innocent, the vagrant, the thief, the murderer. This is The Lineup.
Late, am I, Lieutenant?
No, you're in time, Frank.
All that rain outside, I thought I'd never get here.
Still coming down?
Well, something fierce.
And we can sit right here.
Sure. How does this thing work anyway, Lieutenant, this lineup?
Well, there's the sergeant now.
May I have your attention, please? You people out there on the other side of the wire in the audience room, may I have your attention, please? Thank you. My name is Cogger, Sergeant Pete Cogger. I'll explain the lineup to you. Each of the suspects you will see will be numbered. I'll call off a number, their name, and charge. If you have any questions or identifications, please remember the number assigned to the prisoner as I call his name. At the end of each line, when I ask for questions or identifications, call out the number. If you're sure or not too sure of the suspect, have him held. The questions I ask these suspects are merely to get a natural tone of voice, so do not pay too much attention to their answers, as they often lie. All right, bring on the line. Step it up, boys. That's right. Right over here to the end of the stage. Keep it moving. That's right over here. Step it up. Now turn, all of you, and face the screen. Keep your hands at your sides. Look straight ahead. I'll write number one, Jefferson Dykstaff, possession of stolen goods. Move right up there, Jeff. That's right. Where do you live, Jeff?
Well, I don't know why you've got me up here, Sergeant. You ain't got nothing on me.
Where do you live, Jeff?
Oh, I've got a nice little apartment over on Sedgway Street, sir.
What number on Sedgway?
It's 1408, the second apartment in the rear. I don't know why you got me up here.
You're charged with possession of stolen goods, Jeff.
Well, I don't understand that, Sergeant.
You should. The arresting officers report they examined a trunk in your apartment and found the following items. 227 assorted men's wristwatches, 143 assorted women's watches, 19 rings, 3 diamond pins, 5 pearl necklaces, 17 bracelets. Want to hear more, Jeff?
What's all that got to do with me being here?
Most of these items were reported stolen, Jeff.
They were?
Where'd you get them?
Get what?
The stolen goods that were found in your trunk.
Well, I don't know why you got me up here, Sergeant. You just ain't got nothing on me.
All right, slide on down, Jeff. Number 2, Ralph Crapella, assault with a deadly weapon. Step right up there, Ralph. That's right. Where do you live, Ralph?
Freight yards.
How long you been in town?
Long enough.
How long, Ralph?
I don't have to answer no questions.
And you didn't have to slug that railroad detective with a piece of lead pipe?
I saw I slugged him.
Why'd you do it, Ralph?
He had it coming.
Why?
The dirty fink telling me to get out of the yards. I hope I beat his lousy brains out.
He almost did. He's on the critical
list. Well, he had it coming, a lousy cop. I hope he croaks. And that goes for the rest of you stinking bulls, too. I hope you all croak.
All right, slide on down, Ralph.
Yeah, you all got it coming, you lousy fink.
Shut up, Ralph.
Yeah, take them clubs and them guns, and what do you got? Just a bunch of lousy finks. I hope you all croak.
I said shut up.
Yeah, I'd like to beat all your lousy brains out, you stinking cop.
Get him out of here.
Come on. Yeah, I'm going to do it, don't you hear? He and your boy's the only one. I'll get more of you.
Take him in a tank to cool off.
Yeah, you get it.
All right, number 3, William Goodsall, open charge. Step right up, Bill. Take your hat off. That's right. Where do you live, Bill?
Hacienda Motel.
Sing out, Bill. It's a long way to the back of the room. Where do you live?
Hacienda Motel.
Where's that?
Out of the 105th of Lexington.
How long you live there?
3 days.
Keep your head up, Bill. Look at the screen. Where'd you live before that?
Jennings Motor Court, Washington and Price.
For how long?
2-3 days.
Say, Lieutenant. What
kind of work do you do, Bill?
Recognize him.
He looks like him, all right.
When's the last time?
The guy that held me up.
You sure?
Yeah, that's him, Lieutenant.
What kind of work, Bill?
See how that scar in his nose sticks out now? Oh, yeah, that's him, all right.
Okay.
What are you doing?
Sergeant Carger.
Yes, sir.
Hold number 3. Okay, Pete, let's go.
Took you long enough, Ben.
Number 3 decided to copper. Didn't have to pick a bowling night.
What'd you get him on?
Restaurant holdup. Frank's Cafe.
Over on Drexel Street?
Yeah.
What was his take?
$16.
Frank's business can't be so good.
If you ever ate there, you'd know why.
Well, hold it, Ben, Pete.
No? Something up, Quine?
Yeah, 211 shooting, gas station at Harper and 67th. Captain Waller wants you to cover.
Why us?
The attendant's dead.
You got here first, Trafton?
That's right, Lieutenant. Me and my partner, Salverson, car 62. We got the 211 flash at 817 and tore over.
Who put the call in?
A fellow by the name of Chalmers. He was waiting when we got here. That's him with Salverson over there.
Want to get him, Pete?
Yes, sir.
I can pin down the time pretty close, Lieutenant.
How's that?
Well, been 2 holdups here in the past couple of months. We got orders to keep an eye on the place. We came by about 8:12. Everything was okay then.
So it happened between 8:12 and 8:17.
Yeah, that's right.
The attendant dead when you got here?
Yeah, that's right.
This is Mr. Chalmers, Lieutenant Guthrie.
Sorry, Mr. Chalmers.
Well, I'm okay now. I guess kind of excited, I guess. I never saw a dead man
You put
before.
In the call for the police?
You'd think I would have seen one at my age, but I never saw one before.
You're the one who called the police?
Yes, sir, I called in, Lieutenant. I didn't touch anything. I know about not touching anything. There's a pay booth over there, so I called in from there.
How'd you happen to find him?
Well, sir, I drove in here to get some gas. That's my car right over there, that 51 Chevy. Lights were all on and everything, but nobody was around, so I waited for a while, and when nobody came out, I got out of the car and went into the office.
Mm-hmm.
He was on the floor with all that blood around. I come out again fast and call the police from that pay booth.
Well, thanks, Mr. Chalmers. Stick around for a few minutes, will you? I want to ask you a couple of more questions.
Oh, sure, Lieutenant. Be glad to. I'll be in my car. It was kind of a shock. I never saw a dead man before, you know. I'll be in my car.
Let's see how the lab boys are doing, Pete.
Yeah, sure. Get anything from traffic?
Only the approximate time, between 8:12 and 8:17. How's it going, Fuller?
Hi, Lieutenant. It'll take us another half, three quarters of an hour. Quite a mess in here.
Yeah, must have put up quite a fight.
At least three slugs in them, maybe four.
And what's that under the ladder over there?
A green cap.
The attendance?
Don't know. We'll check it at the lab.
Must have been counting his receipts just before it happened.
Yeah. Ledger book. Lots of small change and bills scattered around.
Looks like whoever did it couldn't have taken anything.
Yeah, only the attendant's life.
Can you come out here a minute, Ben?
Sure, Quine.
This is John Pashley, Lieutenant, company supervisor for the service stations in this area. Ben came down to see if he could help. It's Lieutenant Guthrie.
I'm glad to know you, Lieutenant.
Nice of you to come down, Mr. Pashley.
Well, it's my job. Even if it wasn't, I'd be here. Brenizer was one of our best men.
Oh? That was his name?
Yeah, William Brenizer. Been with us since October of 45. We put him on as night manager of the station here at Harper and 67th a little over a year ago.
You know anything else about him?
Well, let's see. He's 38, married. His wife's name's Mary. Two children, girl 14, boy 7. And it's going to be tough on them.
Yeah.
You know what happened here yet?
It looks like an attempted robbery. The Brenners are trying to put up a fight.
Yeah, but our men are all warned not to resist if any such attempts are made, Lieutenant.
Have you seen the inside of that office?
I guess there was a struggle, all right, but I didn't think Brenizer would put up a fight.
Why not?
He thought too much of his wife and kids. He'd been trying to get off night work because of them. Asked for a transfer to a day job upstate.
Too bad he didn't get it.
Well, he did. He was going up there next week.
Hate this job.
Yeah. Somebody's got to do it.
Sure is a lousy night.
Yeah.
Hello there.
Mrs. Brenizer?
That's right.
We're police officers. Could we talk to you for a minute, please?
Why, sure. Come in out of that rain.
Thanks.
Do you mind coming back to the kitchen? I've got some pies in the oven. I don't want them to burn.
Well, sure.
You're a policeman, you say?
That's right, Mrs. Brenizer.
Friends of Bill's, are you?
Well, not exactly.
Excuse me a minute. I want to check those pies. I'm baking some apple pies. They're Bill's favorites. He'll be home in a little while, and he loves hot apple pie when he comes home. Yeah, they'll be ready in a minute. I thought maybe you were those two squad car men who ride around near the gas station.
No, we're not them.
Bill's told me about them, how they sort of keep an eye on the place. Makes me feel better knowing they're around, Bill working nights and all, you know.
Mrs. Brenizer, there was some trouble down at the Phyllis station tonight.
Trouble?
Attempted holdup.
Bill, something's happened to... What's happened? Tell me, what's happened?
Your husband was shot, Mrs. Brenner.
Shot? Bill shot?
Yes, ma'am.
No. It couldn't be. Where is he? I've got to get to him. Where is he? Bill's dead, isn't he? Dead?
Yes, ma'am.
He promised me he wouldn't fight if anybody tried to hold him up. He promised. And we're leaving next week. He's being transferred to a new job upstate. He won't have to work nights anymore. He won't have to work nights. Excuse me, please. Pies, I think they're burning.
Sure.
The children were looking forward to it. Having their daddy home for dinner. They've missed that. Not having their daddy home for dinner.
Hi, Pete.
Here's ballistics report on the slugs that killed Brenizer, Ben.
Oh, good. Let's see. 32 caliber automatic fired from foreign smokeless cartridge cases. Foreign?
Yeah. Bricker says probably a Belgian make.
Uh-huh. The automatic used. That right-hand rifling. Anything on record that matches?
Oh, nothing.
Nah, there wouldn't be.
You get the autopsy report?
There it is. One bullet wound vicinity right temple. One just to the left of the spine at the shoulder blade. One at the shoulder joint. Another below the armpit to the rear. One eye badly bruised.
Four shots. Three in the back.
Uh-huh.
How do you figure it happened?
Well, Brennerzer must have started counting his receipts around 8 o'clock. At 8:05, Trafton and Salveson came by in car 62. A couple of minutes later, somebody walked in with a gun.
Must have cased the joint. Knew about 62 and waited till it got clear.
Yeah, could be. Brennerzer put up a fight for a while, and that's when the latter turned over and the killer lost his cap.
Are you sure the cap wasn't Brennerzer's?
His wife and brother-in-law say no.
Hmm. Oh, you want some coffee, Ben?
Not now.
What about all those shots?
Brennerzer must have tried to break away. That's when he got the three in the back.
And the fourth one in the temple after he hit the deck?
Yeah.
There wasn't any holdup, Ben.
No. Something's phony.
Has to be. All those shots, no money taken. Brennerzer puts up a fight when company orders are to relax.
Must be great to work out a homicide. Nothing to do but guzzle coffee all day.
Different in the lab, huh, Fuller?
Yeah, you know it.
Sure. Slaving all day over a hot pinochle deck.
You should live so long.
What have you got for us on that cap, Fuller?
Well, it's size 6 7/8. The taping is unusual. 50% cotton, 50% wool. Cap was made on two types of sewing machines. One was a Singer single needle, number 24/7. The other a Singer double needle, number 24/36.
Yeah, boiled down, what does that mean?
You shouldn't have any trouble running down the manufacturer.
Anything else?
I suppose you'd like a description of the killer.
Well, that'd help.
You might try looking for a young white male with medium brown straight hair.
Thanks, we will. Pete, take McDonald, Sloan, Asher, and Quine, make the round of the cap manufacturers. Find out who made that cap, what store handled it, who bought it.
Right.
I'll check with Brenner's family. Look for another motive besides robbery. Guthrie.
It's Quine, Ben.
Hey, what's up?
Got another gas station job like Brenner's. They got one of the guys who did it. Hi, Ben. Pete.
Hi.
Another Brennerzer deal, all right. Stick up, shooting, no dough taken.
The attendant dead?
Yeah. Two punks pulled the job. Attendant shot one of them before he died. Other one got away. He was wearing a green cap then. A twin of the one we found at Brennerzer's.
Where's the one who was shot?
Over there. They're loading him into the ambulance.
Now, let's get over.
Sure. He's a bad way. They figure he'll be DOI.
Easy.
Can he talk?
Little. Doesn't make much sense.
Okay. That does it. Let's get moving, Mike.
How is he, Doc?
Don't bet on him.
Can he talk?
Nothing can hurt him now.
I'll ride along, all right?
Sure, hop in.
Bring back my car, Pete.
Okay, Ben. Let's go, Mike. Help yourself, Lieutenant. All I can do is push some saline solution into him.
Okay, Doc. What's your name, Mac? Can you hear me? What's your name?
Trigger Happy. Halsey. Hung. Trigger Happy.
Who's Trigger Happy?
I told him. Gotta have dough. It's a sensitive. Shoot. Oh. Gotta have dough. You. You a cop?
That's right. Did you shoot down that station attendant?
Am I going to die? Am I?
Let's get out that arm, huh, Lieutenant.
Yeah, sure.
Am I going to die? I don't want to die.
Who gunned down that attendant?
Torch. Trigger Happy Punk.
Torchy who?
Don't know. Last name. Steve. Gunned him down.
Where can I find him?
Don't want to die.
Where does Torchy work?
Garage.
What garage?
Just shooting all he wants. No dough. Shooting.
What garage?
How am I gonna
Let me get that needle out, Lieutenant. No use wasting any more of this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Who's covering the garages, Ben?
Burton and Marzani. They got a squad each.
Lots of garages in town.
Yeah, lots of guys by the name of Steve, too.
Yeah.
Anything on the caps?
Aquine should be in soon with a preliminary report. How are you making out on the grudge motive?
Family says nothing doing. I have a call in for Pashley.
Brenner's his boss at the oil company?
Yeah.
Hey, what about ballistics?
No report yet. But I'll give you 8 to 5 the same type slugs killed both men.
No bet.
Yeah. Guthrie?
This is Pashley, Lieutenant. Sir, I got that message you left for me. I think you might have something there.
How's that, Pashley?
Well, I hadn't thought of it until I got your message, but Renizer was going to be transferred upstate next week.
Yeah, I know.
Well, he had an assistant working for him at the station, a young kid around 19. He thought he ought to get Renizer's job, but Renizer wouldn't recommend him, though. Too unreliable. They threw a few punches about it.
What's this man's name?
Well, I went along with Renizer, of course. Had to fire the boy. He blamed Renizer for it. Said something about getting even.
What's his name?
Oh, well, I looked it up as soon as I got your message. It's Warren. Steve Warren. Pretty unsteady kid emotionally.
I'll bet. Do they ever call him Torchy?
Oh, that I wouldn't know.
You got an address for him?
Yeah, we have, but it's no good.
How's that?
Mailed out his severance pay and it came back unknown at that address.
Oh. Well, what about references? Relatives? Anything like that?
I might have something better for you.
What?
Well, one of the boys here ran into him a couple of days ago. Said he was working at Rutger's Garage, 1900 block on Halverson. You think that might help?
It might. Okay, Pete.
Nobody's come out here.
And Warren's still in there.
What's the pitch?
Honnold and Travis have the exit ramps covered. Burton at the rear door, Johnson Ashner at the sides.
How do we take him?
He's working the grease pits. Main floor in the rear. Floor manager's got everybody working as usual. Shouldn't be any trouble. Let's go in.
Yeah, sure.
Grease pits are back that way.
Oh, I see him. Which one's wearing?
Over on the left. Packing the wheels in that Buick.
Young kid. Looks harmless enough.
Brunners have found out different.
Well, I think he spotted us, Ben.
Yeah. Try to take him easy. Don't want any shooting in here.
Walking away. Heading to that elevator.
Watch it, Pete.
He made it.
Yeah. Let's hit that ramp.
You might have winged him, Ben.
Maybe.
Hey, where's that elevator go?
All the way up. 6 floors.
That could be tough.
If it goes up 6 floors, it will be. My legs can't take this gaff anymore. Well, lucky, Pete. He's up here on 2. Elevator door's open.
Yeah. All those cars. It's tough to spot them.
Take that side. I'll try over here. It's no good, Warren. You're all through. Toss down that gun and come out.
I see him, Ben, back at that yellow Chevy.
Better make it easy for yourself, Warren. Toss that gun and come out with your hands over your head. You'll never get out alive, Warren. We have men all over the place. Better come out before we go in after you. I'm getting closer, Warren. There'll be no second chance. I'm getting closer. Get him, Pete?
Okay, Ben.
Yes. Call it in, Pete.
Yeah. Wonder if Quine ever came up with anything on that cap.
Lineup, where before you pass the innocent, the vagrant, the thief, the murderer. Listen again next week when we again bring you The Lineup.
May I have your attention, please? You people out there on the other side of the wire in the audience room, may I have your attention, please? Thank you. My name is Cogger, Sergeant Pete Cogger. I'll explain the lineup to you. Each of the suspects you will see will be numbered. I'll call off a number, their name, and charge. If you have any questions or identifications, please remember the number assigned to the prisoners. I call these names.
The Lineup, starring Bill Johnstone as Lieutenant Ben Guthrie, with Jack Moyles as Sergeant Pete Carger, was written by Sidney Marshall, with music by Eddie Dunstetter. Featured in tonight's cast were Parley Bear, Howard McNear, Bob Sweeney, High Everback, Jim Nusser, Herb Ellis, Sidney Miller, Bob Griffin, and Virginia Gregg. The Lineup is produced and directed in Hollywood by Jaime Del Valle. If ever a gal labored too long to land her mate, that gal is Millie, and Millie's mom. There's an unselfish, devoted mother. Does she ever think of herself? No, she's right in there helping Millie get her man. Maybe Millie won't succeed in getting the boss's son, but you'll succeed in laughing when you meet Millie, starring Audrey Totter, Thursday nights on most of these same CBS radio stations. Dan Coverley speaking, and remember, the star's address is the CBS Radio Network.
The Lineup, on Tuned to Yesterday from July 15th, 1952 on CBS. And that closes this hour of crime on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from the golden age of radio. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levonier. Thanks for tuning in.